we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to be with you today on this program. It's a brand new edition. It is January 2025. A new year has begun, and in about 7 days, a new presidency will begin at the noon hour. Exactly. 6 days and 23 hours from now, we will have a new commander-in-chief, and everybody in the country who has been suffering under this disaster of a presidency will rejoice.
Bam!
Absolutely.
Just like that.
And you know what the scripture says, the specific passage escapes me, but let's look it up. When the righteous rule, the people rejoice. When the oppressor rules, the people basically complain. Here it is. It's in Proverbs 22, verse 2. I'm sorry, Proverbs 29, verse 2. We're doing this on the fly, folks. This was not in the agenda. When the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. That's NIV. If you go down to KJV, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. And that's a fact. That's the Bible. That's what Scripture says. And when you look at, you know, Biden v. Trump, nobody's sitting around here pretending that, you know, Trump's like this spotless horse, right? This blameless, blemishless horse, or that's using an old like war analogy, but my point is, what you can't deny is that President Trump stands for many righteous things, not all, but many righteous things, and Biden stands for many evil things, okay? And we've suffered those consequences. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, everybody who gets the people in our country, especially people within the body of Christ, that get hung up on being able to say anything positive or noteworthy about President Trump because he's a sinner and he says and does things at times that we don't agree with, folks, you're not paying attention to the entire Bible history. Because God uses people that we wouldn't otherwise think he would use, because it's not who we would pick. So we just got to be very careful about this, you know, rejecting God's providence and rejecting God's use of flawed men, because that's not biblical, okay? And I understand, like, when you're looking at some of the leaders throughout human history, some of the world leaders, you kind of flinch. You're like, ooh, I wouldn't hang out with them, all right? But the reality is God's ways and God's plan and God's providence is so much above and higher than man's finite vision and sight, that we just have to be very careful about rejecting the idea and the notion that God uses flawed men to carry out his purposes, because that would be a rejection of basically the entirety of Scripture as far as different storylines and different history lessons about who God uses throughout human history. A lot of the time, it was very flawed people that God used to carry out his purposes. So that's just something as believers we have to be able to work through in our mind and our understanding. is that, and this isn't to say that all of the people that God has used throughout human history for his purposes are necessarily born again believers. That doesn't have to be the case. God can use unbelieving people who don't have personal salvation in Jesus to still work out his purposes, all right? That's just a fact. So I said during an interview I was on with Dinesh D'Souza a couple weeks ago, I said on this very same topic, I said there's no denying, and this isn't talking about President Trump's personal salvation, but kind of taking a zoomed out approach, there's no denying that God is using and has used President Trump for his purposes for this nation. There's no denying that. Then there's also the scripture about God overseeing the appointment and the selection of kings and leaders throughout human history for his purposes. But let's turn our attention to the scripture, the actual passage that I was supposed to be reading before I took a five-minute rabbit trail, Psalm 144. Blessed be the Lord, my rock, this is verse 1, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. Psalm 144, verse 1, blessed be the Lord, my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle. So here the writer, this is David, is petitioning the Lord and recognizing that it's the Lord who prepares his hands for war and his fingers for battle. And in this case, David's very well talking about actual physical war. But the same could be said in the spiritual realm, right? Because we may not be facing the types of, human wars that people in ages past have faced, although some nations do. But you can directly apply this to our spiritual battle, which we all face whether we realize it or not. It is the Lord who trains our hands for spiritual war. It is the Lord who trains our fingers for spiritual battle. So this passage, where when you read it at its face, you go, oh, David's getting ready to go slay the enemy. Well, yes, but also David was facing a spiritual battle. And so the same could be said about us today. We may not face physical threat or physical battle, but let me just tell you, the spiritual realm is very, very real. For a believer not to understand and recognize the spiritual realm is to be rejecting a large portion of how both God and the enemy work in the spiritual realm. So spiritual warfare is a real thing. It's a biblical thing. And as Christians, we ought to be prepared to engage in spiritual warfare. That's Psalm 144. Verse 1. Well, jumping into some of our stories I want to get to this week, speaking of spiritual warfare, there is currently a spiritual war in our nation over the hearts and minds of our young people. That's unchallenged. That's a fact, is that our young people are being pulled between good and evil, between right and wrong. And unfortunately, many youth are falling prey to the wickedness of this age. Well, the Oklahoma education superintendent, Ryan Walters, he's been on fire the last few years, and he's doing a lot of good work up there in Oklahoma. But he was recently doing an interview, and he was talking about this notion that that the government can't be involved in anything religious, anything Christian. The government just can't touch it, can't be involved in it. And he's talking about how right now the status quo is that the government is involved in some type of religion. It's called state-sponsored atheism, where we reject God, we can't talk about God, but we can talk about Marxism and this man-made religion. So let's listen to this interesting clip about state-sponsored atheism, clip one.
First of all, you know, the left has done an incredibly effective job at gaslighting the American people into believing that somehow, you know, our schools and education system is just neutral. Okay, well, first of all, absolutely not. That's not been their play and tactics dating all the way back to the 1960s. What we have right now is state-sponsored atheism, okay? our schools literally say, you can't mention God, you can't mention faith, you can't even express your religious liberties in our school, you can't pray, can't talk about a Bible verse. So they strip all of this out of our history and say, here's what you're going to learn. You're going to learn secular humanism. That's it. Okay? Atheism. That's it. You're going to learn every critique of every American hero, any Christian, frankly, any Jew. We've seen this accelerated, especially in higher ed, anti-Semitism. But you continue to see this is what is being pushed in our schools. It is to turn kids against their faith, turn kids against their family, turn kids against this country.
Oh, there you have it. That's Ryan Walters. He calls it state-sponsored atheism. When you affirmatively reject Christianity and say we can't talk about the God of the Bible at school, but then you teach about all these other man-made theories and man-made false religions, what are you doing? You're affirmatively promoting state-sponsored atheism, a rejection of the God of the Bible, our Creator. And who really thinks, and we've talked about this before, but who really thinks we can have quality education without the Bible? Ask our founding fathers, because the primary textbook in America's first universities was what? The Bible. How do you have knowledge without God? You don't. So this gets at the very fundamental argument against Christianity being central to our education system. It just doesn't work. Because you're telling young people God doesn't exist, or if you don't say God doesn't exist, you say, well, we don't want to talk about that. We can't talk about that. But then you start trying to educate your mind and your heart towards the things that you see, right? The natural world. And then every time you turn a corner, you're seeing God and the truth of God. But then at the same time, you're having to tell yourself, oh, wait, God doesn't exist. What? And so every time they come across any type of, you know, natural study about God and the evidence of God, they're telling themselves, oh, no, we can't talk about that. This is why when our nation first decided that God can't have a role in education because it's quote-unquote religious, well, that's like mistake number one. Imagine trying to tell your kids about creation, about why we need policemen, about why we need a military, about currency, about fill in the blank, about why we have government, why we have leaders, why we have mommy and daddy, you know, how on earth we get logic and theory and science. Like, how do we get all things? Imagine explaining all of that, and then every time something points to God in the Bible or his natural order, you have to avoid it. Like, how does that work? It doesn't work. It creates confusion. Well, who's the author of confusion? Satan is. So we are fostering confusion. So we just have to attack this notion that the God of the Bible can't be involved in anything called government. I just think that's not true. That's not true. And we can have religious freedom. We can have freedom of conscience. We can have personal liberty in America and still have Christianity as the central theme and fabric of this nation. Well, how do I know that? Because we did it for like 200 years before people decided it wasn't cool anymore. And you can talk to Stephen McDowell and David Barton and all the other founding father experts on the fact that people can have freedom of conscience, they can have liberty, we can have religious freedom without booting the God of the Bible and our Creator from every aspect of government. It just doesn't work.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman here with American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, our tours for 2025, our spiritual heritage tours of Washington, D.C. and Williamsburg and Boston, they're filling up. They're halfway full now. And we've never had a response quite like this. So what I'm saying is, if you want to go with us this year to either Colonial Williamsburg, which includes Jamestown and Yorktown, or Washington, D.C. and all the sites of our nation's capital, including Mount Vernon, or if you want to go with us to Boston and see the Freedom Trail and all the sites of the greater Boston area. If you want to go on these trips with us this year, it's time to check into the information and register so that you make sure you're on one of our tours, the one you want to go on, obviously. So go to the website wildmangroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com. Hope to see you on one of these in 2025.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Hey, one project that I want to mention throughout this week and even beyond if we need to is our preborn campaign. We've been doing this for several years, partnering with Preborn, formerly known as Mission Preborn, but now just simply known as Preborn Ministry. And to put things simply, they're providing free ultrasounds for women and babies. That's a fact. And they're providing ultrasounds for families. Like if mom and dad come in and they want to see their baby, and for whatever reason, they can't afford or access a primary care physician to get an ultrasound, they're offering free ultrasounds. So even dads are coming in certain circumstances and seeing the ultrasound with the mom. So this affects men too. I don't want to make sure I emphasize that. We always talk about the mom and the baby, right? Because that's the guaranteed patient. But oftentimes dads are coming in too and benefiting from this. So Preborn is providing free ultrasounds year round to thousands of moms and babies. And the impact here is phenomenal. The impact here is almost unbelievable. Up to 85% or more of women who go into these ultrasounds and they really don't know what they're going to do. Some of them maybe even be considering abortion. 85% of them choose life. All right. So the impact here, if you look at it from a human impact, from a spiritual impact, the impact is huge here. So basically, view it as an 85% success rate when it comes to the impact of these ultrasounds on the moms. And it's very affordable. That's why we're partnering with Preborn. We do this every single year. Sometimes we do it a couple times a year, but we're partnering with Preborn to provide ultrasounds to moms in need. Our goal this week is to provide 4,500 ultrasounds. That's our goal this week. I think we can easily meet that, maybe even exceed it. 4,500 ultrasounds. The ultrasounds run roughly $28 per ultrasound, $140 will provide 5 free ultrasounds, all right? So if you give $28, that covers 1 free ultrasound. If you give $140, it provides 5 free ultrasounds. But look, I know that there's people out there listening. Maybe you have $500, $700, $1,000, or even more, and you want to provide more than just 5. Maybe you want to provide 10 or 20 ultrasounds. We welcome those gifts as well. And let's see, $5,000. Some of you may want to give $5,000. That will help rescue 200 babies. That'll provide 200 ultrasounds for these moms and these babies. So here's how you can give. You can go to AFR.net right there on the homepage at AFR.net and donate, AFR.net. Or you can call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, AFR.net right there on the homepage, or call 877-616-2396. 2396. We'll be promoting this all week. And if we need to, we'll promote it next week as well. But we want to provide as many ultrasounds as we can through partnership with Preborn. That's what we're doing this week. This is just one aspect of the entire pro-life movement that we have to provide. Ultrasounds are proven to help moms choose life. So that's what we have to do, is provide as many of these ultrasounds as we can. All right, back into the stories. Just to wrap up the last segment, when I was talking about God in government, God and education. There was a study out of the Federalist covered this, but the let me get past the paywall. This study was put together. Here it is, the Cardis Education Survey. I've had this story in the can for like a month. Bobby's probably thinking, finally, he's getting to it. But because I have some of these clips and stories that it takes me a week to get to. But this is a Cardis Education Survey, C-A-R-D-U-S, a Cardis Education Survey. We'll link to this on the show notes on the podcast page if you want to click through it. But just to summarize the report, it shows that young people that are either privately educated or homeschooled are much more likely to stick to the faith, to stick to the faith and worldview and ideology of their parents, as opposed to those who go to public education. So basically, if you homeschool or go to a private Christian school, you're much more likely to stay respectful and stay rooted in the faith and the worldview of your parents and your home, as opposed to going to public education, public school, where students are much more likely, multiple times more likely, to end up rejecting the faith of their parents and the worldview of their parents. So the negative effect of public education is just, brought forth through study after study. And it shows that folks, these formative years where worldview is developed are very, very important. And if we send kids off to these environments where God is rejected, God is talked down to, and we can't talk about God, and all we talk about is Marxism and atheism, folks, that's not good. That's not setting our young people up for success. And this Cardis Education Survey really bears that out. Well, moving on to a few other stories I want to get to this segment. There's a lot to talk about, but I can't help but continue to discuss this wildfire, or these wildfires over in California in the Los Angeles area. This turned in from one wildfire to now multiple. I mean, we're talking 5, 6, 7 at this point, and it seems like a new fire is popping up literally every day over in Los Angeles, and the threat's not gone. Look, some of these fires are only 5, 10, 15% contained. So this is still a problem. This isn't a past story. This is a current story. And there's so much we could talk about here, but the incompetence is on a whole nother level. The incompetence in California and Los Angeles is at a whole nother level. And the left, all they want to talk about is climate change. And I actually saw this tweet. I'm going to pull it up now. But it says, it's amazing that our government will tell you with a straight face that they can't stop a regional fire, but if you just pay more in taxes, they can change the entire global climate. It's even more amazing than anyone believes him. It's even more amazing that anyone believes him. So that was put out by a gentleman named Michael Cipher. Sorry. But it's so true. When you think about it, it's almost laughable. So you're telling me that if we drive electric vehicles and give the government enough money to fight quote-unquote climate change through government regulation and spending, that we can impact global temperatures and global weather, but we can't stop regional wildfires in Los Angeles. You got to be kidding me. But this is what these people believe. It's so laughable. And there's so many people that go along with it. It's infuriating. And CNN actually just did a report on how many people are completely uninterested in climate change now. People don't even want to talk about or read about climate change. Instead, they want to know about practical solutions to stopping wildfires like what's going on in California. So let's listen to this CNN report. It's about 2.5 minutes, but CNN is shocked that people don't really care about climate change. Clip 3.
I don't think Americans are making this connection. And the way we can see this in right here and now, take a look at the monthly change in Google searches. Look at the searches for wildfire, up 2,400%. My goodness gracious. This is the most amount of people searching for wildfires ever going back since Google Trends began back in 2004. But look at climate change. Look at the change. It doesn't go hand in hand with wildfires. It's actually down. It's down 9%. And I also looked in California. There has been no increase in the number of searches for climate change. So the bottom line is this. Americans are definitely interested in learning about these wildfires. They're interested in following the news about the wildfires, but they are not making that connection with climate change. That's the bottom line here.
That's
Mr.
a
Berman.
Really key metric you're looking at there, the connection. Overall, Americans being worried about climate change, what have we seen over time?
Yeah, you know, we have seen a lot of extreme weather events over the last few decades, right? Hurricanes, heat waves, wildfires. You might expect that Americans worry about climate change would climb. Climate change, worry a lot. You go back to 1991, it was 35%. Now, it was a little bit higher in 2007, a little bit higher in 2022. But look at this. In 2023, the last time we have data, 39%. That is not statistically significantly different from this 35% back in 1991. So despite all these extreme weather events, Americans are really no more worried about climate change than they were, what is that, now nearly 35 years ago? I mean, there's just no real trend line here, Mr. Berman.
So the question is why?
Why? Why are they not really worried a lot about climate change? It might be because they feel like there's not a whole heck of a lot they can do. So climate change, humans contribute a great deal. Again, there's no real trend line here over the last few years. 2019, 49%. Yeah. 2020, 49%. 2023, 46%. 2024, 45%. That's actually down 4 points from where we were back in 2019. And so less than a majority of Americans believe that humans contribute a great deal to climate change. So the bottom line is that is a big reason why they don't worry a lot. They just don't feel like they can do anything about
it.
So
the trend line is going down, even as scientists say that the intensity of these storms and these conditions are getting worse.
Even as the extreme weather goes up, humans are not exactly as worried about climate change as they necessarily once were.
Well, there you go. That's a CNN report on people being completely uninterested in climate change. And 2,000% more people, Bobby, are interested in wildfires.
Man, dos idiotes is all I can say.
Well, they lost me, Bobby, when he kept referring to 1991. As 19,091.
Yeah, 19 in the year 1991 of our Lord.
1991. Yeah.
What are you trying to say? Like back in the year 19 like it was, and you're 20.
Like it was 400 years ago or something.
I know.
Like, well, that's like, around the time I was born.
Oh, it's like, only 39 years ago? Oh, okay.
Yeah, 1991. That's interesting.
We won't talk about any of the weather-related calamities that have been documented in history for nearly 100 years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's,
This, Bobby, is people, they're not buying the climate change narrative.
And that's the bottom line.
Yeah. I mean, they're pushing it hard. Don't get me wrong. They're pushing it hard. If you listen to Al Gore and CNN, you would think everybody believes in climate change. But what they're just reporting on is that nobody actually believes it.
But they never came out and said it.
Right.
They never drew the line.
Right. Yeah, they were baffled, right? Baffled. But folks,
I don't know, Mr. Berman.
I know, folks, this is it's really insulting when you look at it. And not only is it insulting on our intelligence, but folks, we've got a lot of, they view us as like the idiots in the room.
Yes.
I mean, the American people who don't believe in climate change, I mean, we're like flat earthers to these people. And, this is the ruling class, folks. I mean, between the media and the Democrat Party, this is the ruling class. And it's complete gaslighting. Complete gaslighting. We literally, the climate change, don't get me started. It infuriates me. It's literally a man-made hoax. It doesn't exist. The science underneath the climate change movement, meaning man causes climate change, they used to be global warming till the globe stopped warming, and then they change it to climate change because that always is applicable. It is so, the science underneath it is not even, it's not even right to call it science. It's so sandy, like it's a sandy foundation. It's sinky. It can't hold water. I mean, it's so faulty. And every time they come out with a new study on climate change, it gets completely debunked. There are natural weather cycles. That's it. Like, if I had to say natural weather cycles, if I had to, like, write three words just to, like, a mic drop moment in response to the climate change hoax, it's weather cycles. It's natural weather cycles. Folks, this has been, we've been having weather disasters since the dawn of creation, okay? And to act like you and me, like, using our our natural gas, our driving our cars that use gasoline is causing hurricanes and wildfires. Are you an idiot? Like, we directly know that California's mismanagement of their forest, which we'll get to next segment, and I actually have studies to bring up now because I've had the weekend. We directly know that their man-made mismanagement in California is why LA is literally burning right now. Because the reservoirs weren't full. They're too busy about the environment, whatever the environment is. I thought the environment meant the trees too, but we're letting them burn up. And what about polluting the atmosphere with all the wildfire smoke? I mean, like, everything that they say they're against and the reason they don't want to take any proactive measures to properly manage their forest, all of the things that they're claiming to avoid by managing the forest, by not managing the forest, is actually happening now. Like, wildlife is being displaced. Some wildlife is dying because of the wildfires. But we don't want to hurt the turtles. Well, the turtles are getting burned up in the wildfires. So it's like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I mean, this is almost, it's not quite there, in my opinion, but it's almost criminal. The negligence is almost criminal. And I don't know why, in the civil realm, like, everybody's so sue happy, right? Everybody wants to sue. And it makes me so mad. Like, small businesses can't do business because everybody wants to sue them because somebody got their feelings hurt or somebody slipped in the parking lot and hurt their knee. So we're going to sue for $1 million. Like, everybody, like, we're like swimming up to our eyeballs in insurance because everybody's so sue happy. And this isn't just like businesses. This is everybody, right? I mean, name a celebrity that hasn't been sued for something. But what we talk about, the intentional negligence and responsibility of the California government on the wildfires, and the lawyers are like, well, I just don't know if you can sue them. I think they have some kind of immunity. Oh, really? Really? But if somebody slips in the Walmart parking lot, we can sue Walmart and get $10 million. Or if you go through the McDonald's drive-thru and drink the coffee that's hot, you can sue McDonald's and get a pretty penny. Are you kidding me? But we can't sue California government for their intentional negligence of not properly managing the forest? What?
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you with us on this program. Well, hey, it's good we hit a break because I was sure getting worked up. Because folks, this stuff is so simple. It's not like we're not doing like trigonometry here. You know, we're not doing algebra. I was never good at that stuff, right? This is just so simple stuff. It's like almost like I can't believe we're having to talk about this, Bobby. But California's mismanagement, I mean, it's a scandal. And it should be covered as a scandal by the media.
Exactly right. Because there's been at least three other circumstances that I can recall in recent history of wildfires. The last scapegoat was PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric.
Yeah.
They were fined hundreds of millions of dollars for.
Which I disagree with.
I agree. Right. I agree. Yeah. Now they're trying to do the same thing with Southern California Edison.
Yes.
They're going to make them the scapegoat. But
fossil fuels.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the people in the powers of authority that are not taking responsibility. And they're the ones who are at the top of this issue.
Yeah, I completely agree. And look, folks, we're in 2025. The notion that power companies have to cut off power due to high winds is like, what are we doing here? Like, I thought we were kind of an advanced nation, and y'all don't have a solution to high winds and power transmission lines other than to straight up cut power off for 1 million houses? No, that's unacceptable. Like, get the smart guys in the room and figure it out. This is what our nation does when we face problems, is we get the smart people in the room and we figure it out. And let's get the theory. We're not just theorizing, you know, we don't need to just, you know, spend a bunch of money on reports because that doesn't get us anywhere, but let's fix problems. And this is the ingenuity and the get to itness, which is a completely new word I just made up, that we've lost in this nation. Is we're all hung up in certifications and regulation and reports, and we'll actually read reports here in a minute about California's mismanagement, but we don't have a lot of doers. We don't have a lot of people that just get it done, right? Like, let's stop acting like we got to do studies and certifications and safety reports and we got to set up a commission and da-da-da-da-da. No, like, let's just do normal stuff. Like, let's just do what's been proven for hundreds of years, and that is, let's clean the forest up. Let's do controlled burns. Let's have extra reservoirs around in case we need water. Like, we don't need to study this. It's like we know what to do, okay? It's almost the equivalent of saying, like, we're not really sure if the earth is flat or round, so we're going to produce a commission and a report on it. No, we're not. Because how many people have looked into this before and came to the same conclusion? So, no, we're not. So, speaking of mismanagement, I'm going to play a clip. And then after the clip, I'm going to read the report because it's actually the summary page is pretty brief, so I can read it here on the air. But okay, before we do that, let's get into the whole arson theory, because I texted a group over the weekend and I was like, hey guys, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I find it quite ironic that these fires are popping up miles apart. Oh, well, don't you know that the embers can float up in the air and travel multiple miles and start a fire? Yes. Theoretically, that can happen. But folks, the rate that these fires are taking off is quite insane and unbelievable. Well, what do you know? LAPD, or I think it was technically the county sheriff's office, arrested an illegal immigrant with a commercial-grade blowtorch that was lighting up neighborhoods in Woodland Hills. Listen to this report, clip 4.
We want to go live to Woodland Hills, where Zach Soss from our sister station, KTVU in Oakland, is helping out with our coverage tonight. And Zach, you've been in this Woodland Hills neighborhood that's typically quiet, but not tonight necessarily.
Yeah, far from quiet. You know, this afternoon already starting off incredibly tense for this neighborhood. We're about 5 miles as the crow flies from the Kenneth fire. So people here were already on standby, ready to leave their homes. And then things got even more frightening for these neighbors. Around 4:30 this afternoon, we are along the intersection of Arcos and Glendo. Around 4:30 in the afternoon here, neighbors say they saw a man on a bicycle with a blowtorch. He was driving up and down the blocks with this blowtorch, apparently trying to light trash cans with tree debris on fire at one point, trying to light a old Christmas tree, a dead Christmas tree on fire. You know, neighbors fearing that he could start, of course, another fire, deciding they had had enough, that they were going to step in. They followed this gentleman up the block, and that is where two neighbors finally decided to detain him. They had zip ties, and thankfully, they were able to hold on to this person. The LAPD arriving a short time later, taking this person into custody on suspected arson. Now, I can tell you that through a police source, we have learned that this person is believed to have been tied to the Kenneth fire. We are blurring out their face. You're looking at this video of him being detained. We are blurring out his face because police have not officially come out and said that he is connected to the Kenneth fire. But this is what a police source is saying. Neighbors now here being credited with potentially stopping another wildfire from starting. Take a listen.
Started, I just heard a lot of disturbance outside. And I heard someone in the front yard and someone else yelling over there. And there was a lot of yelling back and forth. And I didn't really know what was happening. So looked outside and there was a gentleman with a blowtorch, like a propane blowtorch, like not a little one, like a full size, like commercial size blowtorch. And the other gentleman was yelling at him to put it down. And he didn't want to put it down. And We're like, no, you got to stop now. And he said, well, he's already tried to start a fire at my house. And so he tried to start a fire across the street. And he's like, he's got to stop. We need to detain this and call the police, get on the police. And so we called the police and basically detained him here until the police got here. And the police took him away.
Well, there you have it. So that's a local news report. And then an eyewitness who engaged the suspect. So why are we talking about climate change?
Well, that's man-made climate change.
Literally,
you bring your own torch, you create your own climate.
You want to add insult to injury, Bobby? Guess what? The suspect's an illegal immigrant. You can't make this stuff up.
Big surprise there.
The suspect is an illegal immigrant. Yeah, I'm just gonna raise the topic that we're all thinking around the coffee pot, but we don't want to say it. Because we're either Islamophobic or some other phobic, right, that the left throws at us. But is it possible that this is terrorism? Is it possible that this is terrorism? Because there are a lot of bad actors around the world, including Iran, that don't like us, right? And these traditional terror attack targets are becoming harder and harder to hit. So is this in their playbook? All right. Is this in their playbook? Like, let's think outside the box, right? If you're a foreign adversary and you want to hit a soft target, this is it. You capitalize on a vulnerability, right? So that's not beyond the realm of possibility to at least think about, folks. We need to be on guard. Wise as serpent, innocent as doves. But what we do know is that there's at least two individuals. One of them we know is an illegal immigrant that were arrested with commercial grade blowtorches. Now, who rides their bike around with a commercial grade blowtorch in a wildfire zone? Effectively, no one. Okay? So this LAPD we don't have reasonable calls to arrest them on arson. What? Like, there were eyewitnesses where he's lighting things on fire. What on this earth are we getting to?
We're going on a blowtorch 10-click ride this weekend.
I know, right? Like, everybody does that, right? So there you have it. So we know at least two individuals in the LA area have been arrested on arson charges, or at least on suspicion of arson, and one of them with a commercial-grade blowtorch. So you can't make this stuff up, all right? And that should be like headline flashing, boom, illegal immigrant. Arrested with commercial-grade blowtorch trying to light fires in a neighborhood in L.A. So how did these fires start? Like, that's a big deal. Like, I think the FBI, with new leadership, needs to get involved. Is this terrorism? We need to know that, all right? Because we can sit around and say climate change, and we can even bash Newsom and their complete mismanagement of the forest, which is a fact. But if we've got people committing arson and intentionally lighting up fires with commercial-grade propane tanks and flamethrowers, then we got bigger problems on our hands, folks. All right? We got bigger problems on our hands. So they need to get to the bottom of it in L.A. on why on earth they have multiple fires starting in multiple parts of the city and men riding around with flamethrowers on their bikes and lighting fires in neighborhoods. That is a, like, big, big problem that they need to get to the bottom of. Speaking of big problems, there was a report going back. This goes back 2018, I believe. So 7-8 years ago, on the mismanagement of California's forest. Let's listen to this local report, and then I'll read from this this congressional report that they put out over in the state of California. But this is clip 5. This is a local news report on California's forest mismanagement.
An independent oversight agency states that the mismanagement of California forests as a leading cause for the rise in wildfires. According to the U.S. Forest Service, 27 million trees have died on state and federal lands in the last year. 129 million have died since 2010. The Little Hoover, a state government review commission, says California's forests suffer from neglect and mismanagement, leaving them open to disease, insects, and wildfires. The report suggests California lawmakers simplify how they take care of the land in the state, add more financial and staffing resources, take steps to protect air and water quality, and spend more time telling people why spending money on forest treatments is important.
All right, so that local news report from California is referring to a legislative report that this commission put out. The commission's called the Little Hoover Commission, all right? And this commission releases various basic reports on how government can improve the way they do things. So this was report number 242. It was put out in February of 2018. It's about 87 pages long. But let me just read the brief overview to give you an idea of what this is talking about, all right? So the Little Hoover Commission released a new report on Monday. This goes back to February of 2018, calling for a dramatic culture change in the way forests are managed to curb a disastrous cycle of wildfire and tree deaths. Instead of focusing almost solely on fire suppression, the state must institute wide-scale controlled burns and other strategic measures as a tool to reinvigorate forests, inhibit firestorms, and help protect air and water quality, according to the commission's report. Immediate action is crucial, according to Pedro Nava, chair of the Little Hoover Commission, and he said, quote, "Dead trees due to drought and a century of forest mismanagement have devastated scenic landscapes throughout the Sierra Range. Rural counties and homeowners alike are staggering under the financial impacts of removing them. We have catastrophic scale fire danger throughout our unhealthy forest and a growing financial burden for all taxpayers and government like California has ever seen." Over the course of the commission's year-long study, the number of dead trees, which is basically fuel for the fire, in the Sierra rose from 102 million to 129 million. The commission found that the deadly bark beetle invasion responsible for the tree kill signaled a larger problem of mismanaged forest and climate change. Well, I'll dispute that. The report sent to Governor Brown at the time, not Governor Newsom, and the legislature makes 9 recommendations to restore forest back to their historic fire regime, our regimen. The commission urges expanded funding for state-prescribed fire crews. Imagine that. Prescribed burns. And forest administrators to oversee a transformation to more proactive forest management. Resilient forests improve safety and make economic sense. The cost of mismanaged forest, on the other hand, for every level of government and many California homeowners in and around the Sierra Nevada, have become an unsustainable burden in California. Firefighting costs in the first half of this fiscal year alone have already topped $700 million. That's in the first half of the fiscal year. In addition, just wrapping this up, the commission found that forest treatments should be accelerated and expanded throughout the Sierra Nevada, and that there must be greater teamwork between state and federal agencies to plan and implement the work. And the state must create a long-term bioenergy plan to address the disposal of millions of dead trees, as well as fund and develop a public education campaign about the importance of healthy forest in the Sierra Nevada. So there we have it. And the full report's about 87 pages. It actually gets into the specific recommendations. And I may not agree with everything in this report, but let me just tell you. The first two things they talk about are controlled burns and removing the dead trees. And this is not rocket science. And this was done between seven and eight years ago. This report was put out. And it was put out by their own legislature. This commission was set up by the legislature. So they're like telling themselves what they need to do, and they still don't do it. So this is utter and rampant mismanagement in California. And if I live in California, in LA area, and I'm a voter, even if I'm liberal, I'm furious right now. And they ought to be furious. All right? California can be saved if the sane people get in charge. But right now, the uber Marxist liberals that deny science and reality are the ones in charge. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we have partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears the heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.